Deplorable Nation, a podcast where your voices can be heard, where things that affect you and your family are important, because it's important to all of us. Every one of us matters and everybody has a voice. We're going to be bringing you news, current events, and throw in a lot of humor. And then you decide for yourself. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Deplorable Nation. It's episode number 31, Constant Struggle. And I'm your host, Deplorable Janet, and today I have with me a very special guest. We're going to be talking about a super serious subject, piggybacking as well off of last week's subject on PTSD with my good friend Mick. Today, everybody, welcome Miss Chelsea. Miss Chelsea, how are you today, dear?
Hey there. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am super stoked and excited that you agreed to do with this podcast with me, because this was a request from a listener, longtime follower of mine, and today's subject is really deep and very dark. It is about suicide. So this goes out to my good friend, MB. I love you, and I'm really sorry for what happened to you, but I hope today's show can do some justice to the loss that you experienced with your daughter. So my hat's off to her, and I love you very much. So thank you, Chelsea, for coming on with me today to talk about this.
You're welcome. I'm honored that you asked me.
So tell everybody like a little history on you and what your story is.
Yeah. Okay. So I am a mom of four. And looking back at my life now, and I'm almost 34 years old. So looking back on my life, I realized that I always had anxiety as a kid. I was a nail biter. I couldn't sleep ever. I mean, it was just like the typical kid with anxiety, you know? Youngest of five kids too. So I was just like, where do I fit in? You know, where's my spot here?
Right.
And then I went to college. And when I first got to college, that's when my world kind of like just blew up in terms of like, I didn't know how to cope. Like I didn't know how to be on my own. And so then I developed an eating disorder that kind of took root for a few years. And fast forward, got married, had babies, had severe postpartum depression with my first, and then with my second child, she's my only girl. So I have three boys and one girl. And with my pregnancy with my daughter, it was, I mean, the lowest of low depression I've ever been in my entire life. And that was when, during that pregnancy at 36 weeks, I was suicidal. And, it was a dark time. I mean, even looking back now, like I have goosebumps right now, just even saying that, because it was just such a like terrifying, lonely time, you know? Right.
And so, I think that's what a lot of people go through, that where people can identify with everything that you just said, even from the get-go. With the anxiety and trying to find your place, and you don't feel like you fit in, and loneliness, and you know, new surroundings and new experiences, and you don't know what to do, and it's overwhelming.
Oh, totally, totally overwhelming, and just something that was just like a shock to the system of like, how do I do this? How do I adult, and how do I, you know, live life on my own. I mean, that was when I went to college, that was when it all kind of blew up. Like I need help. Right. Like I'm not under my parents' roof anymore. Like I don't know how to do this. And so I turned to different coping mechanisms, and that was, anorexia, like not eating and controlling that aspect of my life was something that just kind of developed, you know?
Right. Right. Absolutely. So tell me, take me down the path of when you were in the suicidal phase. What was that like for you? Like, how dark was that, and what put you there?
Oh my goodness. It was a perfect storm, I think, of a lot of things. And my OBGYN likes to say that because I was pregnant with a girl, and again, that's my only daughter, but like, it was like an estrogen storm in that last trimester, you know? Agreed. And it was just crazy. Like, I was feeling things that I'd never felt before. And I was doing things that weren't characteristic at all. Like, I was checking my husband's phone constantly. I was checking his emails. Like, I was convinced that he was cheating on me. Looking back now, like, I literally lost my mind. And it was so frightening because those things all felt so real to me. You know, right. Like, I was like, he's cheating on me with a coworker, and my husband is like the most adoring husband you'll ever meet. Like, it just is not a thing with him, you know?
Right. Right. It's your mind playing tricks. And that's what I think so many people go through, that where everybody's talking about me, everybody's, you know, looking at me, everybody's, you know, like, almost like everyone in the world is out to get you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And one thing too, that was tricky for me was that I was pregnant. Right. And I had this baby, she was almost full term. And I remember just thinking, I'm going to go to the emergency room and I'm going to tell them that they need to take this baby out of me because I'm going to die. I want to die, but I don't want her to die. Like, I wanted her to be able to live. And that was, I mean, honestly, she was what kept me alive, because if I hadn't had that baby inside of me, I would have been gone, you know?
Right. And so was a lot of it because you were so overwhelmed with everything, not to mention the hormones? And I can second the with a girl pregnancy hormones, because that's definitely true, or it was true in my case as well, where it is like an extra overabundance of hormones.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of it because you were so overwhelmed.
I think so. I mean, it was a combination of, my husband had just gotten a new job. He was getting his MBA. I had a 2-year-old at the time. My oldest child was 2, and it was just such a busy time. And I just also felt like, I remember feeling this resentment for this baby girl and feeling like, I'm not even excited. Like, I'm not even excited to have this new baby. Like, I don't even love her. I mean, there were feelings, but of course, that now looking back, like, I mean, she is so precious to me.
Right.
But at the time, feeling like I didn't have anything to look forward to, because I was like, I don't even want this. Right. I don't even want, because I just felt like it was messing everything up. It was so weird.
It's because I think a lot of people, when they get in situations like that, there were so many things going on and your life was so chaotic and so complicated at the time. That is one more thing being added to the pot and, you know, put into the mix, if you will. But it's also, like, that was your scapegoat. Yeah. And a lot of people who have depression, anxiety, mood swings, panic attacks, PTSD, things like that, there's usually a trigger, almost always a trigger, especially for panic attacks or anxiety attacks. There's almost always something that causes that, where you kind of need to, like, almost like step outside of your body and figure out exactly what it is that's causing you to constantly relive those states of panic or anxiety or stress.
Yeah.
But that's a bad thing, because so many people, especially college students, when they have that, like, they're so overwhelmed. You go from high school where things are easier, let's say. And then you go into college and it's like you have to write all of these papers and do all of this reading and you have to whatever. And then you got to learn to adult and live on your own and buy groceries. And holy crap, stuff's expensive. Mm-hmm. Like I experienced that with my daughter when she first went to college. And it was like, I had no idea like why you were always saying how expensive things are until I got on my own. And it's like, oh my God, especially when I have to get cleaning stuff or laundry things you know, whatever. And she's like, that, add that on top of, you know, trying to make new friends, living in a new city or a new place, you know, trying to do things on your own, plus trying to adjust to a whole different learning system that you're not used to.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot. Growing, like that adulthood transition is a lot for sure.
Right. And I think, you know, college students or even students in high school get really overwhelmed like that because there's so much pressure put on them. Whereas like when I was younger, I didn't really feel like I had the pressure that kids do now. And some parents even are the triggers for the kids who apply the pressure where it's like, you have to do this many sports or you have to do this many after school activities or you have to get, you know, straight A's. Oh my God, you got an A minus. That's not okay.
Yeah.
Or the students themselves putting pressure on themselves, which is undue because as long as you do your best, that's all that's ever expected from most parents. I will say there are exceptions, but you know, even the students that are like, an A minus is not good enough. I have to do better. I have to do better because I have to get into a really good school. I have to get financial aid. I have to be accepted by all of my friends.
Yep. Well, and you know what's interesting about that too, teenagers, one thing that I think is we can't ignore is social media.
Right. 100%.
Because, I mean, if, you know, I graduated high school in 2005 and I look back now and I think when I graduated in 05, MySpace just became a thing, right?
Right, right.
So my senior year of high school, the, you know, spring semester, we were all getting on MySpace and it was like this brand new thing. I mean, it was just crazy. But if we had had social media when I was in middle school and when I was in high school, I mean, are you kidding me? Like, I think that is one of the worst things that our poor teenagers are dealing with right now. Like social media is one of the biggest culprits of these feelings of anxiety and depression and overwhelm and FOMO or whatever in these teens these days, you know?
100%. And I agree with that because one of the questions that I get asked the most from people that reach out through messages and whatnot, like I have really bad depression or anxiety, like what can I do? Number one, shut off your social media. Put the shit down. Don't look at your phone. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you a little fact. It is way worse for females.
Yeah.
Because females are usually the ones that do not only Twitter, but Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, you name it, whatever else is out there. Which you said MySpace, and I had to chuckle because most people would have no clue what the hell MySpace was now.
Yeah, that doesn't exist anymore, thankfully. It was like the grungy social network ever, and it's like long gone. R.I.P. MySpace. Right. Yeah.
Right. And so now it's like Snapchat and stuff, which is real popular with them, or TikTok or whatnot. Girls are the worst, and girls are literally the meanest creatures on the planet.
Oh, even adult women. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
100% agree with that. And that is why 99% of my friends are males, because women are just hateful, nasty people. Yep. And so multiply that by like 10,000 when you have teenagers, because girls get it the worst all the time because you're fat, You're ugly. You're a whore. You're a slut. You're stupid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's nonstop, literally 24/7 on all kinds of social media. And they're very childish at that age, to the point where if Susie hates Mary, then all of Susie's friends have to hate Mary too.
Right.
And then,
yeah,
exactly. And then you'll have people jump in the mix that don't know either one of them, but that are attacking Mary also.
Yeah.
And so that is literally the first step, is shutting off social media, or don't look at your phone, limit it to 20 minutes a day or whatever. You have to take that time to reclaim your life, because number one, not only is it nasty language and calling you names and things like that, but it's also all of the negativity.
Yeah.
And there is so much, like, social media now is a complete and utter cesspool for hatred and negativity of literally every kind.
Yeah.
And I want to bring something else up too. The curriculum that's being taught in schools now, the BLM curriculum, where if you're white, everybody automatically hates you because you're a racist. You were born a racist. Everybody automatically hates you. And so that's being compounded in schools now, because schools are actually teaching hate and negativity instead of teaching, you know, we're all the same and we should all love each other and we should all respect each other. That is not the case anymore.
No, it's crazy. Like, it's so hurtful as a mom to hear, like, I mean, my kids, like, they don't see color. They don't treat people differently. I mean, they go to school with kids from India and kids from Pakistan. Right. And I mean, so they have, they have every color of skin in their school, and my kids don't even notice it. But then when they're taught, like, oh, well, you have, you know, white privilege, or you, like, just the stuff that my daughter in third grade was like, what does that even mean, Mom?
Exactly. Like,
how do you explain that to them?
And that's the thing, is that you're teaching isolation and loneliness, blah, 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 sorry, in schools nowadays. Or if you're teaching racism in your home, you're leading that child down that path, because racism, you're not born with that. It's a learned behavior. Hatred for other people is a learned behavior. If you're teaching your kids, like, you know, all Democrats are loonies, or, you know, all right-wing people are, you know, this or that, you're teaching your children things that are not necessarily true, instead of teaching your kids, whether in school or at home, to be accepting and tolerant of others, and to learn to live together and respect each other. You're actually causing loneliness and despair for them.
Hmm. Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. And you know what's interesting right now? Like, what you just said about social media. Like, I wrote a post, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, about how our youngest, he's almost three, but he's our last, he's our fourth and final. And I wrote a post about how I was kind of sad, like, that we aren't going to have babies anymore. And it was interesting, because on that post, I got like a few nasty grams of people being like, well, you didn't even consider the women who can't bear children and who have IVF. And, you know, you've had four children, so be grateful. Like, I was like, how is this how are you attacking me for this? Like, it's almost like, I mean, even me as an adult, like, I feel like I can't even speak about anything because someone's going to get pissed off about it.
Right. And that's another factor for depression, anxiety, things like that. there's so many PC police out there.
Oh, yeah.
That you don't know, you're being told by this group what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. And literally every day that changes. And then they add more words or more phrases, or you have to call this person by this pronoun or blah, blah, blah. Not only that, but now you're teaching children that it's okay for them to choose as an underage child what of the two biological genders they can be. They can't vote, they can't buy liquor, they can't buy a gun, they can't do any of that stuff. But at 5 years old, you're teaching them that maybe they shouldn't be a boy when they were born a boy.
Right.
So all of these things in society, you're actually messing up our children. Stop it.
Stop it. I agree.
Literally stop it. As a parent, if I knew who to whip, I would sure as shit do it in a heartbeat.
Drop kick.
Because they have enough. They, honest to God, have enough stuff that they're going through. Because kids in school, they worry about their grades. They worry about their parents. If you don't have the right clothes, especially girls, they are some hateful MFers.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't have the latest. What are you wearing? Did that come from Walmart? Is that from Goodwill? You only shop at Goodwill, don't you? Oh my God, your parents don't love you. And so it is like the nastiest environment that you could ever have in school. Doesn't get a whole lot better in college because college is very judgy too. It's not really until you get to be an adult where those things really, you either care or you don't care. Right. I personally don't care. I just don't.
I don't either.
But those are things that kids go through.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about like how the pandemic has affected teenagers.
Oh my gosh.
People in general.
Where do we even start with that? I mean, it's like, my goodness. I mean, so my oldest is 11. So he's a tween. He's not, you know, he's not a teenager. He's in fifth grade, but I have nieces and nephews. I have a niece that's a freshman in college and then some others that are high schoolers. And just hearing their experiences, I mean, but I will tell you that last spring when this shutdown happened and my kids were all home and, you know, all this, my son who was 10 at the time, and he's like sweetest kid. I mean, good helper. I mean, he kind of acts like Dwight Schrute sometimes, but like, we still love him, you know, but like, he's a good helper. He's a great leader in his class. But he told me one night he had a quivering chin and his quivering lip. And he said, Mom, I think I have depression. And then he told me, I've been thinking that I want to hurt myself and I want to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so if my son, who's in fifth grade, mm-hmm. could say that to me, I mean, imagine, and he doesn't have social media, he doesn't have those things yet, but imagine those juniors and seniors, I mean, freshmen, it doesn't matter. Those teenagers,
mm-hmm.
I mean, are you kidding me? The weight that this has put on them.
And it's like a extremely vulnerable population because, and here's a little statistic for people. The CDC did a study on mental health and suicide. The second leading cause of death in 10 to 24 year olds is suicide because of the pandemic.
Oh.
Second leading cause of death from 10 to 24 year olds. Let that sink in. Because kids in general are very social.
Yes.
And they have to have interaction. They have to have other people to talk to. They have to have their friends. They have to do sports. after school activity, they have to have that face to face, you know, laughing on the playground or, you know, joking with one another at the lunch table or whatnot.
Yeah.
And I can tell you as a parent, of course, my daughter's older now, but we went through that when she was younger. Not only the attempted suicide, which she was hospitalized for a while, but getting in trouble at school. And then I took her phone away for a week. And you would have thought I was literally trying to kill her myself. Because she was cut off. No email, no text messages, no social media, no Snapchat, no whatever, whatever, whatever. And so not only do you have that where you took away their ability to be social, then you mask them. Because, you know, first kids weren't in, you know, involved and they couldn't be infected. And then, like kids have to wear a mask. Even there, some people are even putting babies in masks, which I want to punch those people.
Yeah. Good night about that. Are you kidding?
But now you're putting kids in masks and they can't see people's facial expressions. And I will tell you, at that age, when they're adolescents, teens, and young adults, and even older people, but especially for that particular group, facial expressions are very important. That means of communication where they can see the smile or the angry or the grin or happy or whatever it is, that molds and shapes their personality and who they are. And when you take that away, that causes delays in development, which also leads to a whole host of mental health issues that we don't even have the time to cover today. But it's like a complete and total cut off of society. And this is not just for kids, but this is for anybody where you can't go to work. You can't meet with your family. You can't have gatherings. You can't do this. You can't do that. So again, the loneliness creeps in. The despair creeps in. It causes people to be depressed and anxious because they can't do their normal routine. They can't see facial expressions. They can't see people in general. They've lost their homes. They've lost their jobs. They have a loss of income. People are living on the streets. People are so depressed and so sad and whatever. And it's all tied into this nasty little box of the pandemic right now.
Right. Well, and you know what? I have so many thoughts swirling around. So I want to go back to one thing you said. You were talking about kids and you were talking about how they have to have these things. They have to have sports and after school activities and youth group or, you know, chess club after school, whatever it is, they have to have those things for their development. And I'll tell you, several months ago, I posted a meme on my Instagram account of, I mean, it was floating around. Maybe you saw it. It was like a small wave that said COVID. Mm-hmm. And then behind it was this giant wave that was coming up and it had, you know, homelessness, poverty, drug overdose, addiction, you know, suicide. Like, I mean, all these things. That was the bigger wave that was going to swallow COVID. But all these cameramen and media were just looking at the smaller wave, not looking at the bigger wave. Right. So I posted this. And I mean, most of my followers are like-minded, so I didn't get much flack on it, but I did get one gal who blew me up about this. I mean, I'm talking like 10 voice memos on Instagram, just telling me that I was so off base and I was missing the point and all these things. And she's not a mom. And so I'm going to kind of tell you from my lens what I was telling her. I said, we ended up having like a pretty respectful discussion, but I said, listen, like from where I'm coming from as a mom with my kids, the ages they are, like, this is a huge deal. Like this has affected my kids in these ways. And this is how it's manifested and blah, blah, blah. And this is what she said to me. She said, and I keep playing this in my mind because of how ridiculous it was. She said, do you understand how privileged you sound that you're upset that your kid can't go to golf or that your daughter can't go to dance? She's like, I'm sorry, but people are dying out there. And that's what she said to me, that I sounded privileged because they've been turned upside down. They're, you know, no youth group, no dance, no go. I mean, things are kind of starting now again with masks and, you know, all sorts of mandates, but like initially, I mean, there was nothing. They were all of a sudden stuck at home.
Cut off from everything and everything that they, even if it was an activity that they may have hated at the time, once you cut that off, it makes them miss what they hated in the first place.
Right.
You know, whether it's, you know, a forced sport, like your parents made you play soccer or, you know, whatever. Even if it was something they didn't like, once it all stops, they're like, oh my God, like I literally can't do anything. And any parent on the face of the planet knows your kids get so bored at home. Mm-hmm. They always want to do something. Oh my God, it's so boring here. Why can't we just do something?
Right.
And guess what? There's nothing to do.
We've done all of it. We've made all the puzzles. We've taken all the bubble bath. But you know what the thing is too about that? And it's interesting that we are recording this on Groundhog Day because this has felt, and I was telling my husband about telling him the same thing the other day. I said, this has felt like Groundhog Day for almost a year. Right, and you think about for our kids, my kids are, we're lucky they go to a charter school. And so they've been in school Monday through Thursday in person this whole year, which has been such a blessing. But I mean, like you think about the same, it's the same thing every day. You wake up, you do the same, like you're restricted to your home. You're, you know, the same thing. And Groundhog Day feels hopeless.
Right. Exactly.
And when someone feels hopeless, these teenagers, these tweens, these college kids, when they feel hopeless and feel like, I never see this getting better. Mm-hmm. That's when suicide becomes their best option, they feel like.
Right. Because they feel like they're stuck in a situation that they absolutely cannot get out of. Yep. And there's no sunshine. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. And like I said, to go back again to the loneliness, the despair, the cut off from society, you know, the depression, the anxiety and all that creeps in when they can't go and do, and especially the states that have like the really retarded lockdown measures where you like are not allowed to leave your house, like at all.
That to even walk your dog, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're a politician and then you're completely fine to do whatever you want to do because they don't have to abide by the laws.
Right.
But, you know, that whole, it's a whole new thing. And so as a parent, I want to tell people like what things to look out for. So me personally, look for withdrawal in your kids. Any kind of withdrawal where they just, they used to be, Susie talks a lot and now they don't want to speak to you. They want to spend all their time in their room. They're really depressed. They don't want to eat. They're not interested in food. Their attitude changes. Maybe they get really angry. Maybe they're highly aggressive. Or maybe they went from being super happy to like mopey constantly. Maybe their sleep patterns are different. things like that look for that stuff, especially with this pandemic going on. But those are things that you definitely can focus on as a parent. And I'm going to say, and this is probably going to get me some flack from some parents, however, this is the honest to God's truth. Before the pandemic, a lot of parents were very, very disconnected from their kids. You have a lot of parents who don't check their homework, don't check their bags, wouldn't know if their life had changed, don't carry on normal conversations, things like that. Now, I will say, pandemic-wise, for a lot of people, it made people focus on parenting again, which is not necessarily a bad thing for most parents. However, there are those parents that may also be suicidal now because you're having to be a parent.
Right.
And it's bothersome to you. And, oh my God, like I have to deal with my kids all day. Oh my God, I have to homeschool. Like, you hate your life and whatever. And there are, unfortunately, two sides of the coin on this where you could be one of those parents that are basically disgusted that you have to parent and you don't want to. Or you could be one of those parents that's like, oh my God, I used to work so much. Now I have time to spend with my kids. And you're connecting on a deeper level.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what would you say are things to watch out for warning signs for your kids?
One thing with us is anger. Like my son, one time my oldest, he did something and I took away the laptop that he was playing Among Us or Roblox or whatever on. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like you said, like I took away his way to communicate with his friends. I mean, he was angry. He blew up at me because, mm-hmm. and my daughter as well, my 8-year-old, the way her anxiety manifests, and she's had anxiety her whole life. I mean, that's a topic for another day, but the way her anxiety manifests is anger, and she gets frustrated and she'll throw things and she'll be mean to her brothers. And she says the most nasty, hateful things to me and my husband. And I mean, she's just angry. And when she's angry, I'm like, okay, what's going on? Like what's really the problem? Because I know that you're not this hate-filled little girl. I know you're sweet and I know you're beautiful inside. Like what's happening? You know? And then we kind of get to the bottom of it. But one thing I want to add too is that as a mom, and I'm not a professional by any means. I mean, I've had my fair share of hours in a counselor's office and in a psychiatrist's office. And I mean all the things. Like I have enough hours to be like, I don't know, at least like a master's degree in like this kind of hard knock life stuff.
Exactly. Amen to that. Right.
So I'm not a professional, but one thing I think my siblings kind of think I'm kooky in this regard because I'm telling them you need to be watching your teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm not trying to sound like an alarmist, but you need to watch out for them. And my oldest niece is a freshman in college and she and I have a great relationship. We talk all the time. And she has a great relationship with her parents, but I'm a different confidant for her, you know? And she was telling me things about how she was feeling. And she was just, I mean, sobbing. And this is not normally a girl that has anxiety or depression, you know?
Right.
And I had to call her parents, my oldest brother a while ago and just say, hey, I need to clue you in here that she's not doing well. Like, you got to get her into counseling or you need to take her to the doctor or something. Like, I am worried that you'll walk in and find her not breathing. Like, this is serious and you need to pay attention.
Right.
So that's my thing as a parent. Like, even for my 8-year-old, I mean, we do counseling. My husband and I have done parent coaching. We do supplements to address her gut and her brain because I don't want to have her on medication, which is another conversation, but
amen to that. Yeah.
We, we address it. It's not like I'm like, oh, she'll grow out of it or what. I mean, when my son in the spring told me that, you know, I want to hurt myself, I want to die, I immediately texted the counselor that we use for our kids. And I said, I need to get my son an appointment.
Right.
So don't put it off. Don't think like, oh, you know, they're just a grumpy teen or whatever, or, you know, they're just going through something. No, you have to take it seriously, because your teenager is not going to come to you and say, Mom, I'm so depressed, I think I want to die. That's not what they're going to tell you.
Yeah.
They're going to tell you through anger and through sleeping a lot or through changing their eating habits or through, you know, whatever, but they're not going to tell you.
And some kids are very, well, and adults too, are very good at the, oh no, I'm fine.
Right.
I'm totally fine. I have a bullshit meter on me. I always know when the kids are feeding me a line of bullshit. And I'm like, all right, no. Now, luckily, like, my daughter and I have this super open line of communication. But for most parents, even if you're really close to your kids, you're not going to have that, because they don't want to open up. And here's why. Because here is some of the biggest mistakes that parents or people dealing with somebody that is suicidal can ever do. Why can't you just cope? Mm. Why are you so depressed? Why can't you just be like your brother Johnny? Like, I don't know what is wrong with you. Go to your room. Like, your attitude sucks. I don't act like you don't care. Don't act like you don't understand, because that is a humongous no-no to do with anyone that's dealing with, especially suicide, because you're further alienating them. Sometimes they'll tell you they don't know why they're depressed. Mom, you wouldn't understand. Dad, you wouldn't understand. Like, you've never been in school before, or you've never gone through college, or you've never whatever. And so it's an immediate defense mechanism for them when they speak to somebody that belittles their character or belittles their emotion. They instantly put up a wall. It's our own body's way of protection. And so a lot of parents may try to have those conversations, but the kids will shut you down because of your tone or because of what you said. And so, me personally, having been a nurse, having worked with tons of patients, having worked with my kids and lots of other people, because I am the sounding board for a ton of people. They will call me when they're having a rage, and they will just yell at me and like whatever, everything in the book. And then they'll call me later and be like, I'm really sorry about that. And I'm like, I know it wasn't directed at me. And that's the thing a lot of people need to understand, is you have to be very, when you're dealing with people that have these emotional issues, especially with suicidal patients, you have to let them know that you completely understand that they're very overwhelmed. Yes, you have a lot on your plate. What can we do to ease that? And one of the most important things is always use some kind of humor when they're in a really dark space. Say something funny to, like, at least get them boosted out of that deadly zone.
Mm.
And refocus their attention even for a moment, and then be like, you know, I can completely understand why you're feeling the way that you're feeling. You have to be like Switzerland. You have to be neutral. You can't attack them. You can't belittle them. And you have to make them feel like they're not alone. and that you're on their side.
Right.
But you can't talk down to them either and be like, you know, and make it about you.
Right.
You have to let them get it out and tell you. Because if they're willing to talk to you, that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing too that I would add is that you can't react with a ton of emotion and be like a blubbering mess. What do you mean you want to die? You don't want to die? Like, why would you say that? You have a great life. Like, and make it about you. Don't do that.
Right. That's a huge no-no.
And just hold yourself in, cry later, but just say, hey, like, we're going to get you the help you need. Like, I am here, whatever it is that you need. And one thing that you said about humor that I thought was interesting. So I think I'm hilarious. Like, I'm one of the funniest people I know. And the reason you don't know that yet.
I agree.
But you will learn that eventually. But like, I have realized as an adult that I developed a sense of humor at a very young age, because that's how I coped with my feelings of anxiety and loneliness and things like that. Because if I made people laugh, I felt connected to them.
100%.
And so that's something that I still use humor. Like, I can be telling the story of my, you know, suicidal time in my pregnancy with my daughter, but the next sentence I'm having people like laugh until they cry. Like, that's just the reality of it, is that there's this flip of the coin. But one thing I want to address too is that a lot of times, like, suicidal kids or teens or adults, it doesn't matter. They're not the person that you would peg as the person who would kill themselves.
Right.
Like Robin Williams, Kate Spade. I mean, there's all these, we see all these, you know, Robin Williams made his career out of making people laugh and making people happy.
Right.
And he was so sad and broken.
Right.
And so, you know, that's why I tell people, like, it's not necessarily the kid that's like quiet in the corner. It could be the student body president who, you know, feels overwhelmed.
Outgoing.
Yeah. The most outgoing, the most popular, the most handsome kid. And the next thing you know, he's gone. And you have to, like, it doesn't, you know, depression and anxiety, mental illness, like, it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't matter what you look like or what your grades are or, you know, how much money your family has. It doesn't matter.
You know? And that's so true, because the way things are now, 40% generally, which it's getting higher, of our population has some kind of mental illness. Mm. And that's, you know, depression, anxiety, PTSD, whatever. Everybody's level of trauma or depression, anxiety, panic attacks, et cetera, is all different. Some are more severe than others. But the humor thing is so important. And that's what I always try to tell the kids and tell my patients, because one of the most important things you can do outside of getting off of social media, especially when you're at your lowest low, shut that shit off. Mm. Stop looking at that stuff, like I said. But one of the most important things you can do is journal and write down, like, here's all the absolutely shitty things that happened to me today. And then guess what? You got to force yourself too to write down things that happened that were good or weren't so bad. And so here's a funny story. Kind of gross. But I was working with somebody that was having some massive issues. Everybody knows me. I hate medications, and especially for these things, hate it because it amplifies your tendencies for suicide and for suicidal thoughts and ideation. But I'm working with this patient, and they were on medications, and I was like, okay, so here's the things we're going to do, and we're going to work on, you know, weaning you off of these and, you know, setting up this plan for you. And they're like, this medication makes me so sick that I literally have shit my pants a couple of times. And I said, okay. So while you're journaling, I'm like, you could put that in your bad column, like you're irritated because your medicine's making you sick and it made you shit yourself. I said,
I'm only laughing because this is funny, but keep going.
I said, now think about this on the flip side of that. I said, it's also really funny because when you shit your pants, then you got irritated that you shit your pants and you like yelled, which means you clenched down, which made you shit your pants more.
No.
And I'm like, that's funny. That's funny right there.
That is funny right there.
And then it was like this whole other conversation. It was like, I never thought to look at things like that. And I'm like, exactly right. You have to laugh at just the literally worst days or the days where like just everything like could possibly go wrong. It does, you know, like you're trying to make dinner or, you know, whatever. And literally anything that could go wrong does, and you burn it or whatever. And you have to see the humor in how just awful your day was. And when you can like pick out like, I know that was bad, but at the same time, it's kind of funny. All this shitty stuff happened today. Then you can start taking your focus from everything is negative. Your life is negative. Everything bad always happens to you. Blah, blah, blah. This constant cesspool, swirling cesspool that's about ready to suck you in under the ground of how shitty life is and whatever. And you can move your focus over to the other side and be like, you know what? That's funny right there. Like I literally, like, I can't even tell you, like, I got a flat tire because I hit like a curb, you know, whatever. Like life is not going to end because of that. But look at all the things that happened to you today that you just have to laugh at. And then when you can move their focus away from all the negative and make them see how funny stuff is, then they stop focusing all the bad stuff. And then they're like, oh my God, like, hey, guess what? I think tomorrow's going to be better because, you know, hey, today really wasn't that bad. Like, it's kind of funny this all this happened.
Mm.
It's very important to move people away from the negative stuff, but you have to get them to see on their own that moving away from that circling cesspool drain over to something more in the positive column is exactly where they need to be to start healing.
Yeah, so true. Because if you don't laugh, you're going to cry. I mean, if we didn't laugh, we would always be crying, you know?
Right. Or, hey, maybe you are crying. And then you're crying so much that your nose starts running and then your mouth is filling with snot.
Oh, always. Gross. That always happens to me. Yeah.
Gross. Yeah. But funny, nonetheless, if you choose to look at it from a different lens, you're literally eating oysters.
Oh.
As we speak. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's gross. But yeah, I do.
I know. And so, like, if you can show people, like, why something might be funny, also, especially, super important, if you are dealing with anybody that's on medications, it is so important to remind them to eat and eat properly. And here's the thing. If you're on any medications, whether they're SSRIs, antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication, whatever the gamut is, you have to eat high levels of protein because your body needs protein for repair. And so you can't like eat once a day and like eat McDonald's like every day. That's all you eat is McDonald's. You actually have to eat things that are high in protein, that are good sources of protein. And unfortunately, you have to tell them constantly, because when you've got anxiety, depression, PTSD, panic attacks, things like that, they forget to eat, or they don't want to eat because their meds just like completely destroy their appetite. Hence, so they can prescribe you more medication.
Yeah.
But you have to make them eat and make them eat right. Like, what'd you eat today? Like, write that down. I want to see your journal. Like, what did you eat today? Also, when you eat properly, when you're on medications, you're going to get better sleep. Because when your body's repairing itself, that's when you get your REM sleep, which is your reparative and your restorative sleep. That's going to help to heal your body. So those are two super important things.
Well, yeah. And you know what's interesting about like what you're saying? This, oh man, I mean, I've gone through the medication roller coaster over the last 12 years of being on, I mean, multiple. At one point, I was on a handful of prescriptions because it was like treating the side effects of a prescription with a different one and then treating the side effects of that one. And then I couldn't sleep. So I was on a sleep. I mean, it was just constant.
Right. And that's why, because were you eating properly when you were on your medication?
No, but that's what I want to tell you, because then I was feeling worse and worse. And I was like, I'm getting all these medications. My doctor is saying that this is going to help me feel better. But the thing was, my doctors never talked to me about water intake, about sleep, about exercise, about nutrition, about gut health. About, you know, not drinking soda. I mean, we don't drink alcohol. I don't do drugs. Like, so I don't have that like in my back pocket, but like, they didn't say like, don't drink soda, you know, don't like, it was nothing. It was just lining up and giving me a slip of paper to go get another prescription. And that's the thing too, is that when I had taken my daughter into the doctor to, talk about like her anxiety and some sensory things she had and some ADD symptoms, the doctor was like, well, the next step would be to try her on a low dose of Zoloft. And I was like, wait, full stop. She is 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am not putting my daughter on medication. And so at that point, then we've gotten really into supplements. Like, what is your body lacking? Is it vitamin D3? Is it magnesium? Is it, you know, there's so many things that like when your body is nourished properly and you have to fill in the gaps with supplements because these days, I mean, the soil is depleted. We have, you know, toxins, pollutants. I mean, there's everything. Like, you could eat completely perfect and still be, you know,
100%
deficient. Yeah. So,
That's why I said that it's so important to focus on doing things that you can do at home, literally the simplest things.
Yeah.
If your kids are struggling, look at their diet, look at their sleep patterns, start feeding them a little healthier food, cut out the soda pop. Oh my God. Yeah, no, I haven't drank any kind of soda. I'm 50 since I was 32.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it's like, cutting out all of that, like excess sugars are a huge thing.
Yeah.
For anybody that's got depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, PTSD, any of that stuff, any kind of mental health issue is removing excess sugars.
Yeah. And it's all related to your gut, the
100%
bacteria, you know, and then the gut, the way 100%. The gut communicates with the brain. I mean, it's crazy how it's all related, but yeah.
Yeah, it is 100%. And, you know, not just foods, and nourishing your body properly. And like I said, when you do that, it's going to make you sleep better.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned before, it's super duper important to figure out what your triggers are. And here's the thing. A lot of people use me, like I said, as a sounding board. They call me, they tell me about their problems. I have patients that still contact me, and I retired like a while ago. But I still have people that contact me on a regular basis. And they're like, oh, this is the problem. And oh, I'm so stressed out. And like, I hate my life. And blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay. But here's the thing. We talked about this same person multiple times now. Like, what's your decision? Because you know, if you keep them in your life, they're toxic to you and they're your trigger. And so finding out what your trigger is so important. Like, I cannot stress that enough. Negativity is a bad thing. Anybody around you or anything around you that is toxic, get rid of them because you're more important and you need to focus on you. So if you are a teenager that's struggling and you have a shitty friend group and they're always saying something crappy to you and whatnot, get rid of them. Honest to God, get rid of them because you will be better in the long run and it will solve a lot of your stressors and a lot of the negativity goes away. And then you're able to forge new relationships with different people that are not negative and not toxic to you. Same thing with adults. You've got to figure out what it is. Like if you're in a cycle and in a rut and I hate my job and every time I pull into my work, it makes me physically ill and it makes me sick. And I just want to puke in my car when I pull in the parking lot. That's a sign for you to change your job. Listen to your gut. Listen to your brain. And you can do small things like that to eliminate triggers, eliminate stressors, eliminate negativity so that you can move forward with a healthier you.
Yes, I actually did that last year. I completely changed directions professionally because I was in just a toxic shitstorm of, and my eyelid is twitching as I'm telling you this. Like that's... Okay. Anyway, I did that. I had to get rid of the entire group of women that I was surrounded with. And it was just, for my own mental health, I had to do that. So yeah,
right. I'm with 100%. And that's the thing is a lot of people, they're like, well, it's easier than said than done. No, it's not. It's super easy to eliminate people that are causing you stressors and people that are giving you undue stress and undue anxiety and undue negativity. I had a job that was exactly like that. And I'll tell you what, that's the job I retired from because every day, and I was one of those people that would pull in, and everybody knows I have a heart issue. Every day when I would go to work and I was taken to the hospital from my job couple times because it was so stressful. And every day I would pull in, I'm like, Mother God, I don't want to get out of the car. I hate my life. I hate this job. These people are retarded and I can't stand it. Worst fucking place hospital-wise on the planet I've ever worked. They literally should be shut down. But it caused me so much stress and so much anxiety, and I'm not a stress person. I don't have anxiety, depression, stuff like that. I'm so even keel and very calm. But this place would make me physically ill when I pulled in the parking lot. And I was literally there one day and I had pneumonia and I got really sick and they're like, you have to wear a mask. And I'm like, I have pneumonia. I literally can't breathe. I need to go home. I have pneumonia. And they're like, you have to stay at work and wear a mask. And I'm like, I really can't breathe. And then it set my heart off. Then I went to the hospital. Then I was off because I had pneumonia. And then they were pissed I wasn't at work because I had pneumonia. And hello, I'm a nurse. I shouldn't be working while I have pneumonia. Anyway, but it was like, you can't come back until you see a doctor. And you have to go to your cardiologist. And I'm like, okay. But they literally can't get me in for 2 weeks. And they're like, oh, well, then you're fired.
No.
I'm like, not really, because I already quit. Like, I gave him a notice earlier today because you're trying to force me to do something that I know is against the medical guidelines. And yeah, so won't be coming back.
Wow.
And I'd already given my notice. I put my letter of resignation on the supervisor's desk. But it's like one of those things where you have to make a decision in life where you're going to go. And are you going to continue to live in the rut that you're in? Or are you going to continue to lift yourself out of that and to do things that make you better? And you can make yourself better completely without taking tons of medication. Because the medication side effects, guess what? If you're suicidal, they increase suicidal ideation. I'm just saying.
Yeah. They definitely can. When I was pregnant with my daughter, my doctor immediately sent me to a psychiatrist that day, and I was prescribed Zoloft right away. But that, I mean, I will tell you though, that like that did save my life. And I don't know if it was necessarily like the medication or just feeling like I was heard and that
someone cared.
Someone mm-hmm. saw me. And so then I felt hope again, but I have said like that saved my life, like that, that man, that prescription. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Like if medication can be avoided, I mean, that's 100%. My first route.
Yeah. 100%. Because, and Zoloft is super famous. It's been around the longest out of all the quote antidepressants and stuff that are still on the market today, but it does have one of the highest rates. You are not supposed to use it in young children. And unfortunately, that is what they're turning to. And it also has very nasty side effects.
Right.
And so then it's, oh my God. Like, you're really sick to your stomach and you're vomiting all the time? Hey, let me give you some Phenergan, some anti-nausea medication. Oh, you're not sleeping? Let me give you Ambien.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a no on all fronts because the side effects on every medication exacerbate in your system and then cause other organs to malfunction. And it's a vicious cycle. And so, you know, something that's super important today with, you know, outside of like watching your kids for signs or watching your friends for signs, see something, say something, try to talk to them. If they don't want to talk to you, get someone else involved. And never let it go. And there's a lot of people, and I know a lot of friends who've been in this situation where they have somebody that's got this really, wink, wink, close-knit friends group. And then you have one member that wants to commit suicide, and they're like, oh, psh. They're joking. They're not going to do it. That's silly. That's stupid. Like, whatever. Oh, what they did? Buy, like, a bunch of drugs from somebody to actually do it? Yeah, they're not going to do it. It's dumb. Where are they at right now? Oh, they're home alone. you're just as guilty if you stand by and allow it to happen, because there's things you can do. Like I said, if you're the patient yourself, reach out to somebody, make those changes that you need to make, with eliminating toxic, jobs or people or situations, etc. Limit your social media or shut it off altogether. Learn to eat right, you know, sleep better, do things to focus your mind, whether it's journaling, painting, creating something, doing something you've always wanted to do artistically wise, or climbing or going through the woods, or, you know, whatever the case may be. There's also national suicide prevention hotlines that you can call. It's 1-800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K. That's 8255. There's a suicidepreventionlifeline.org. If you don't want to talk to somebody on the phone, you can go to their website. These are things that you can do and that you have to do to not only make you better, but also like save you from turning to drugs or alcohol or whatnot as a crutch just to get you through. You need to talk to someone and do positive things to change your situation.
I totally agree with that. And one thing that I think is so important, and this is what like my main goal on social media is to talk, is to be a stigma breaker about this, right, and to talk about mental health issues. And I mean, if you were to look at my social media, like, you wouldn't think that I struggle with anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation from time to time. You wouldn't think that. I have a beautiful home. I have a beautiful family. I have, you know, we're financially stable. I mean, like all these things, but I sometimes have this darkness that just engulfs me, you know? Right. And so that's one thing that like, I talk about it because I think people just always have this preconceived notion in their mind about mental illness and what it looks like. And it's not that. It's not what people think it is. And it's, you know, I'm a high functioning, high performing mom of four. I'm, you know, the life of the party. I'm a dynamic public speaker, but at nighttime, sometimes I cry myself to sleep.
Right.
And sometimes I cry in the shower thinking I can't do this anymore. And I just want to die. Like, and that's the thing is that we need to talk about it.
Right.
So that people understand that like, people are struggling in silence. And if we talk about it and we bring it out into the light, we feel that community with it, you know?
Right. And you know, one thing about that, crying is therapeutic.
Yeah.
Do not, and I've told people this before, do not ever let anyone tell you, whether you're a man or a woman or whatever, that you're not allowed to cry. The hell you're not.
No.
Because when you cry, you let out all of that stress, that anger, that emotion, and that's your body's way of achieving what's called homeostasis, which is balance. That's your body's own way of putting you back emotionally and physically into balance. If you need to cry, if you're watching an Alpo commercial about dog food and you need to cry, do it.
Yeah.
People that you're with may be like, what the heck? Oh, that wasn't sad. I know. I'm just recentering. I do it all the time because I pick up like everybody else's energies. I do a lot of anxiety, depression, PTSD, focus work with people. It gets overwhelming for me sometime energy-wise, and I cry. And my husband will be like, you good? And I'm like, yep, just I'll be done in a minute. I got to get the rest of it out.
Oh, there's okay. Nothing,
and then I'm good.
There's nothing better than a good cry, for real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Are you an empath, Janet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, I feel, 100%.
Yeah, I feel things all, and my daughter's the same way. Like, she'll cry. I mean, I don't know if you watched on Netflix, like My Octopus Teacher or whatever that movie was. Did you see that?
No.
Well, okay. It's about an octopus, and my daughter cried. I mean, she feels things so deeply, but, right. But anyway, that's just a blessing of, and a curse of having anxiety.
It is.
You feel things deeply and you feel things deeply, you know?
And I will say that is why she feels anxiety, because at that age, she doesn't know what she's dealing with and she doesn't know how to let that out. And I've had this discussion a lot with people before, and we've even talked about it on a podcast before, that when you are an empath, and so many people are, so a lot of your teens and stuff that are committing suicide, they may be an empath because they literally pick up everybody else's emotions and energies. They feel the hate speech. They feel stuff through movies. They feel the emotions that were meant, like in the movies, by the writer, et cetera, et cetera. They can feel the loss of somebody else's family member, literally everything. And it gets to the point where it's so overwhelming, especially if you don't know what it is. And you have like all of these emotions that are flying through you, like a race car. And until you, like talk to somebody and figure out what it is and figure out how to control it. Ooh, that is like, that'll make some people crazy. Honest to God, it does. Yeah. And so for me, like centering is super important. Keeps my mental health in check, keeps my sleep in check, keeps my personality in check, and then like heals me emotionally so that I can go on and talk to somebody else.
Yeah, so, because healed people help heal people, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so anybody that ever has an issue or problem or needs to talk, I'm here. You can reach me on Twitter at KNOW Janet. You can reach me on Instagram at Deplorable Janet. Follow the Podbean account. Like, download, subscribe. I'm on Parler. Not Parler. I deleted Parler. I'm on Gab, but I have trouble getting on there. But that's at No Deplorable Janet because somebody stole my name. Mm. So anyways, you can find me in lots of places. Miss Chelsea, where can they find you at?
Well, I love that you said that because that's, I mean, I spend my time advocating so much for mental health. And that's, I mean, that's like the purpose of my presence on social media is just to like talk about it, get it out in the open, like let's find solutions. And that's what I help a lot of parents with solutions for their kids just because of what I found with my daughter. But I am mainly on Instagram. My handle is at one of courage. So One of Courage on Instagram. That is my handle. That's where I do most of my stuff.
And, you know, that's really important because when I had the mom reach out to me about her daughter, she said, I'm just so angry and I just want to know what I can do. And I said, you know, starting groups, which a lot of churches, a lot of foundations, a lot of different places have support groups, especially for parents that have gone through this or people that are struggling with it, kind of like, you know, the Al-Anon groups do.
Yes,
for,
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah. But churches and stuff, start your own foundation. Go to be a public speaker when you heal. And when you feel like you have gone through your grieving thing and now you're ready to take action, start your own foundation, start a public speaking engagements, go speak at churches, go speak at schools, get the word out, tell people about your experience, tell them what you've gone through. You know, all you can do is like preach from the rooftop, and God has given you a moment to basically preach the word and to get your word as a parent out, or your word as a spouse, a loved one, a child whose parent committed suicide, any of that. Get empowered.
Yeah.
And use your voice. It's super important.
And I think just when you assign purpose to that pain,
100%,
it changes. And that's why, like, I am such an advocate for maternal mental health, especially because I think about what would my family be like if I did leave behind these two young children years ago? Like, I just think about, the thing is, there are moms, there are postpartum moms who are taking their lives every day.
Right.
And if I can be a voice and say, hey, hang on, like, it's going to get better, let's talk about this. If I can be a voice and save just one mom, or just one teenager, or just one anybody who's struggling, then that pain that I went through for so long is not in vain.
Right. And that's, you know, I'm a huge believer in fate, and everything happens for a reason. And I'm here because I was meant to be here, because I've had a lot of near-death experience. I've had a lot of trauma. I've had so many things. I could totally write a book. But I'm here because I'm here to help other people and to listen, basically, and to get people's stories out and to be that sounding board for people when they call and they're so pent up and they're so angry and they're so frustrated. And they just call and they may like completely scream at me and then hang up on me. And then later they're like, I'm really sorry that wasn't directed at you. And I'm like, I know, because I know. I've been there. I've gone through that with, you know, family members, friends, patients, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes people just need that person and that sounding board, because counseling is great. But if you can find that person that is going to allow you to be that person, more power to you. And that's what my purpose is.
Well, I love that. And I think you can just simplify that by, I mean, everything I heard you say, like, you're here to be a light in the darkness.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an amazing thing. I heard this quote once that was like, and I think that's what we're all here to do, but some of us get jumbled up, right? But right. I heard this quote once that was like, we're all just walking each other home. And I love that, because I think about the path that I've walked and the journey that I've been on, and it's different than yours, but like, I can help walk people along their path. And right. Just like you can, and just like your friend who lost her daughter, I mean, now she can help walk people down that path, and it will give purpose to her pain. And her daughter, you know, she can celebrate her life and remember her in amazing, beautiful ways by helping other families.
100%. I agree with that. And one of the really important things that you can do, like I said, is start a group, discussion group, grief group, whatever you need to do in churches, in schools, literally anywhere and everywhere that somebody will listen. It doesn't matter if you have one person show up. One person that you help is one person closer, you know, to finding their purpose in life. And so it's kind of like the same thing as teaching for me. You know, if you reach that one student and you make their life better and you put them on a better path to a different, you know, to education and, you know, a good job and stuff, that's one person. If you wake up one person with information, that's one person more than you had yesterday.
Yes.
And so your purpose will grow and blossoms like a flower. And so just, you know, whenever people are ready and are prepared, then you're going to go through that stage where you're like, okay, like everybody needs to know the story of my daughter, or everybody needs to know the story of my mom and dad, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And so I just want to say, sorry, this was so serious today, but it is very serious. And all prayers and praise be to God, to all the people that are going through struggles right now. I pray for you, and I'm so sorry. And if you need anything, I'm here. Please reach out. Even if you're a child struggling, please reach out, because I'm here. I'll listen. I'll talk to you. We'll do whatever we can. We'll work through stuff together. And so my message to you today for my final thoughts is, you're never alone. There's always somebody willing to help, and I'm here, and I will listen to you. So get a hold of me if you need to. So Miss Chelsea, any final thoughts for you today?
No, I just love what you said. I am always here to be a listening ear. And I think that's the most important thing, is that people just go to someone that they can feel like they're seen or heard. And I do my best communication through like texting or messaging, because people will just open up. And I have people come to me all the time on Instagram and just, you know, I've been following you for a while and I'm really struggling right now. Like, and that's my favorite thing, to just connect and to just listen to people, you know?
100%.
So please reach out to me too, if you need a friend or anything. I am a textrovert, I like to say. So I can text my balls off all day long. I do not get me on the phone, because I will not talk on the phone because of anxiety. I will not talk on the phone, but I will text all day long.
I'm totally going to call you right after the show.
Don't, because I won't answer. I won't do it. I'll like text you back and be like, what's up? Why are you calling me?
See how she is? She's already hating on me. It's so awful.
No, my phone just doesn't work for phone calls. That's just what happened.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. So thanks for joining us today. Like I said, we knew it was going to be a deep subject again. MB, I love you so much, and I'm so sorry for your loss. And if either one of us could do anything to help you, we're both here. Again, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K. Also, suicidepreventionlifeline.org. If you need help, if you don't have anybody you can reach out to that you trust, you can find resources at either one of those places, or reach out to us, because we're here and we love you. So for me and for Miss Chelsea, I'm so glad you joined me today. So for Deplorable Nation, we will see you next time. Have a good one.